Timing is a wonderful thing. Timing is a wonderful thing. The difference between a hilarious joke and one that falls flat on the audience is in the timing. Sporting commentators frequently talk about a well-timed tackle or a well-taken shot, with a late tackle being frowned upon and at times dangerous. The art of baking a perfect cake, I am told, is in the timing. Whilst eating said cake, it is thought to be nicer at certain times of the day than others. The relatively recent craze of photobombing requires perfect timing. And you'll see that there's the famous one from the Oscar of Benedict Cumberbatch photobombing U2. We think carefully about timing that difficult conversation with a colleague or relative. We think, when would our news best be received? Our days and weeks are broken down into schedules and timetables of when we work and when we rest. And knowing the time is never more than a question away. In medicine, you need to provide the right dose of medicine at the right time. And life would be so much simpler if only I had more time. What's your narrative about time? Are you somebody who feels that you are constantly busier than you'd like to be, and there's never enough time? Or are you somebody who deliberately packs your week full of activity and busyness? Why is that? Or does time slowly pass you by and you wish you had more to fill your time? Taking another angle, are you stressed about being on time, about being late, or are you relaxed and don't worry about how late you are? Either way, what is going on behind those different attitudes to time? My big thing is that I feel that I need to be constantly in control of my time. I never want to be late. I hate it when my plans don't turn out in the way I want them to. And this week, as I was speaking to Naomi, my wife — she can't be here this morning, she's working — about this, she reminded me of a couple of years ago. She told me off because it was a year before my sister's wedding, and I was planning where to park so that we would be on time. That's my narrative about time. I am a complete control freak when it comes to time. Is that all good? Is it a good narrative or a false narrative? Or is it a bit of both? And how do I relate my time to God? As a Boy Scout, I was told to always be prepared and to plan for every eventual outcome. Now, whilst there is great wisdom in planning and preparation, my experience of taking control and not relying on God has meant that at best, the outcomes were not as great as they could be, and at worst, meant that I've completely missed what God might be doing in my life. Let's just pray quickly. Heavenly Father, I thank you for this morning, and I thank you for Eric, and I thank you for the gift that he is to Adam and Paulina. And I just pray that as we explore this concept of time together and how we respond to it, that you would open our eyes to your plan for our lives. Amen. If you are like me and you like to plan every smallest detail, then releasing time and control to God is not one that really sits very easily with you. Furthermore, when those man-made plans unravel and fail, we're often left feeling lost, confused, hurt, and at times angry towards God that our plans haven't become a reality. So much of my life is set around a question of when that I often miss the how and the journey that God may have planned for me. Being in control and worrying about the time can manifest itself in a variety of ways. Perhaps for you, it might be the pressure of getting to work in the morning, beating the rush hour traffic, getting the kids to school. Or perhaps you face some great uncertainty in your future at the moment, with ill health or uncertain jobs or broken relationships. A few years back, Naomi, my wife, was just finishing med school. And we'd made great plans that involved Naomi getting a job in Leeds and West Yorkshire. And our lives were going to progress along a nice, smooth trajectory that we had planned out. I saw no reason why this wouldn't take place. Naomi was good at her job. We'd settled into a nice community. We loved our home. I was loving my job, we loved this church that we were part of, and we were forming some fantastic friendships. Why wouldn't God bless us in that way? Surely it was part of God's plan to provide a job for Naomi here in Leeds, right? Unfortunately not. Naomi got a job in East Yorkshire, which I know is a big ask, and it meant 2 years of working in Hull and then Scunthorpe, not two of the nicest places perhaps to work. Our immediate reaction was one of devastation, complete and utter devastation. We thought that we'd have to move away from Leeds, our friends, our community, find a new house. I'd have to find a new job. And at first, I refused to accept what was going on. I remember rechecking the system about 7 or 8 times. Surely there was a mistake, the computer system that said Naomi was in East Yorkshire. It can't be true. Surely not. I researched high and low how to appeal the decision, desperately trying to regain some control. That tends to be my natural response in a crisis situation, that I desperately try to fix something that isn't always fixable. And this was another example. That night we went to leadership school, and I remember sitting there quite angry with God that this was clearly not the plan, what had gone on. Well, at least it wasn't my plan. After some brilliant prayers and some support from many of you here, we realized that actually we could perhaps make it work. The next 2 years that followed were incredibly tough. Naomi had a 120-mile round trip each day. We had less time to spend with each other. And when we did, we were often very tired. We were less able to be involved in church in the way we wanted to be. I had to take on far more of the household chores whilst managing a busy job myself. However, throughout those 2 years, God did some brilliant things. We learned to trust him more. What we thought was unmanageable became manageable. God blessed our relationship as we released control to him. We learned as a couple to communicate far better with each other and appreciate the time that we had with each other. Our relationship with each other and with God was stretched and grown as we moved out of our comfort zone and released control back to him. Naomi was blessed with some fantastic learning opportunities that have now shaped the rest of her career. And I learnt what it meant to be a supportive husband, one that, rather than one that looked to take control and solve all the problems. Some of the things we learnt were to adapt our lives to listen to what God was saying at that moment and to place boundaries to ensure that we allocated time to each other and to God. And we still don't always get that right. Where we had previously said yes to things, we had to say no. This was far from easy at times, and we made many mistakes along the way. But looking back, I can see that this was all part of God's plan. A few years later, Naomi is back working in West Yorkshire and loving the job that God has provided for her here. God had a plan. As I prepared for this talk, I started reading Ecclesiastes. And now, word of warning, the book of Ecclesiastes is not an easy read on the face of it. It's an anonymous book of wisdom written, the rabbis traditionally thought was written by King Solomon in his old age. What is written is predominantly an observation of human life here on earth and the toils and troubles experienced by all. The message presents a somewhat negative view of human life, often describing it as meaningless and useless. However, underneath it, there is a message of hope. A hope that comes from placing God at the center of our lives. Chapter 3 presents a thought-provoking and challenging message that there is an appropriate time for all of life's experiences. Let's have a look at what it says. Excuse me. For everything, there is a season, a time for every activity under heaven, a time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to harvest. A time to kill and a time to heal. A time to tear down and a time to build up. A time to cry and a time to laugh. A time to grieve and a time to dance. A time to scatter stones and a time to gather stones. A time to embrace and a time to turn away. A time to search and a time to quit searching. A time to keep and a time to throw away. A time to tear and a time to mend. A time to be quiet and a time to speak. A time to love and a time to hate, a time for war, and a time for peace. What do people really get from all their hard work? I have seen the burden God has placed on us all, yet God has made everything beautiful for its own time. He has planted eternity in the human heart, but even so, people couldn't see the whole scope of God's work from beginning to end. So I concluded, there is nothing better than to be happy and to enjoy ourselves as long as we can. And people should eat and drink and enjoy the fruits of their labor, for these are gifts from God. The passage starts out by highlighting the inevitability of life. Our life here on earth is limited. Life has a clear start and a clear end. However, the journey in between those two dates is like a roller coaster of ups and downs. Throughout the passage, we see stark contrast between highs and lows of life. One of the subjects I teach, I'm a secondary school teacher, and one of the subjects I teach is media studies. And in media studies, we often talk about what we call binary opposites. Now, a binary opposite are used in text to reinforce meaning. And basically what they are is two theoretical opposites set against one another. So it's like love and hate, good and evil, life and death. Now, in the passage, we can see binary opposites being used to emphasize the inevitability of both the good and bad times of life that we encounter. A time to cry and a time to laugh, for example. A time to grieve and a time to dance. A time to be quiet and a time to speak. I'm sure you can look at your lives and identify many of those periods described in the passage. Some of the times we can plan, and some of them are completely out of our control. And some might be long-term consequences of choices we've made in the past. For example, we recently bought our first house, and after years of saving, we've entered into a great phase of spending. This change was relatively planned and controlled. However, I'm quickly realizing that owning a house is very unpredictable and out of control. Some of you have children, and the consequences of your children for your time are long-term and full of ups and downs. Or, as this passage suggests, seasons. The final lines of the poem are particularly challenging. At first glance, are quite hard to understand. It describes a time to love and a time to hate, a time for war and a time for peace. So when exactly is a good time for a Christian to hate? We all know there's a time for love. Jesus was all about love. That was his message. But the passage says there's also a time for hate. Thinking about this, here's what I think that means. I think even Jesus hated. He hated sin. He hated its mastery over human souls. He hated the wake of its destruction. We need to learn to hate that which is evil without hating people who are evil. God hates injustice. We hate the ravages of debt, but we love those who struggle with debt. And we want to do whatever we can to help them. So here's a challenge this morning. Have you found a time to hate, like it says in our passage? It's usually in order to find a time to love. One thing clear about the first part of that passage, the poem part, is that throughout life, we are going to encounter different seasons. We live in a broken world, and unfortunately, we can expect difficult times. Within the second half of the passage, though, King Solomon challenges us to keep trusting God for his plans that are well beyond those that we dream up. In verse 11, he describes that God has made everything beautiful for its own time. He has planted eternity in the human heart. But even so, people cannot see the whole scope of God's work from beginning to end. We have a glimpse of God's vision. We often ask questions such as, why was I born this way? Why did my father treat me that way? Why did my friend die? Why am I missing out on that blessing over there? Or why haven't my plans turned into reality? Our challenge is that we focus our attention on the wrong thing. When we look at today, God is looking forever. We see a painful, awful process. God is working on a much greater product. We see the fuzzy, ugly cocoon. God plans and sets in motion a butterfly. When I think back to my false narrative of trying to be in control of life timings, I realize that perhaps God has got something far greater for me than I can imagine. When Naomi got her job in East Yorkshire rather than Leeds, I was upset because my plans didn't pan out. When I put my hope in Jesus, the whole situation became far more manageable, and I start to see the process that God is taking me on. As a church, we've recently gone into a phase of consecration and realigning ourselves to what God might be calling us to. In January, David spoke on Joshua 3:5, where it says, "Consecrate yourselves, for tomorrow the Lord will do amazing things amongst you." This is a season of preparation. If, like me, you just like to get on, then it's a hard season. My natural tendency would be to go and try and find, to go and do those amazing things of tomorrow today. However, again, I find myself being tested as to who ultimately is in control, and surrendering completely to the love shown in Jesus. In verses 12 to 13 of the Ecclesiastes passage, Solomon concludes that life should be enjoyed. He says, we enjoy life by being filled with God's Spirit. Solomon declares, "So I concluded there is nothing better than to be happy and enjoy ourselves as long as we can. And people should eat and drink and enjoy the fruits of their labor, for these are gifts from God." Biblical faith is a call to joy. And sometimes God is just calling us to embrace those gifts, slow down, relax, and enjoy the moment. A number of years ago, Simon Green, who's sat here near the front, was visiting me at university in Nottingham. Myself and Simon go back some years now. And on the morning he was due to leave, I remember waking up before him, as is a natural occurrence, and telling him to get up because he had a train to catch. After a very slow awakening of Simon and then a long shower, another natural occurrence, Simon, we had about 5 minutes to get to Nottingham train station. It wasn't that far, but it was tight. So I stressed the urgency that we got moving. Simon didn't necessarily agree. As we walked, Simon walked at his usual pace. And eventually turned around to me and said, "My dad always says not to rush anywhere and just enjoy the moment." I wasn't impressed, to be honest. Needless to say, Simon missed his train. And I just left him at the station to wait for an hour for the next one. But as I look back, I admire Simon's approach. And as a part of it has stayed with me ever since. Okay, being on time is good and important, but the precedence that one places on being on time and in control can ultimately mean we miss the point, we miss the moment. The need to be in control is just another barrier between what God is doing in our lives and what we think God is doing in our lives. At that moment with Simon, rather than enjoying the gift of our friendship, I left frustrated about his carelessness for being late and that he didn't conform to my way of thinking. I missed the moment in our friendship. Okay, almost 10 years later now, it's a fairly insignificant story in our lives. However, Simon has been late many more times, but his words has stayed with me and reminding me that actually at times I just need to slow down, enjoy the gifts God has given me, and just relax. As it said in the Ecclesiastes passage, to enjoy the gifts God has given us. Now, if you're sitting here this morning and some of these stories speak to you and you identify with them, there's a few things that I found helpful along the way. If your narrative is busyness, then an essential part of finding a rhythm of life in line with God's plans is to spend more time with Him. Allocate time to spend in worship, meditation, prayer, reading the Bible. Ask God for Him to impact on your life and be with you. Often as I walk around my school in between my lessons, I'll just say a very quick prayer, "God be with me." In that split moment, I find his peace. And that busyness of the day just goes quiet for a little bit, and I relax. For me, worshipping at home with my guitar is an essential part of my spiritual diet in many ways. It enables me to slow down, refocus, and spend time with God. If your narrative is all about planning and control, then maybe you should talk to your friends, your small group leaders, about it. Find some accountability. As a community here, we can support each other. When I think back to Naomi's getting her job in East Yorkshire, it was the community here that enabled us to see something in a completely different light, to slow down and see it from a different point of view. Often the biggest challenge we have in tackling our strongholds and our false narratives is to actually open up and tell someone about it. If your narrative involves time just slipping by aimlessly, then look to become a wise steward of your time. And if need be, change your ways. Think carefully about how you balance your time. How much are you spending with God, family, friends, on computer games, or whatever it is that you do to relax? In David's talk a couple of weeks ago about generosity, he spoke about being good stewards of our wealth. The same applies to time. And we do that by giving our hearts constantly back to God and saying, "This is yours." Finally, release control back to God and trust in his plans he has for you. The biggest investment we can make in eternity is by being wise and trusting him wholeheartedly. As I relook at the Ecclesiastes passage, I now see a message of great hope. If you are going through tough times at the moment, take hope in the promise of the good times ahead. Fix your eyes on his promise on your life and allow God to be in control. If you're going through good times at the moment, rejoice and take joy in his Lord's provision on your life. Remember the prayers he has answered, for they will be your strength when those tough times do come again. If your false narrative is one of control, like mine, replace it with a true narrative of God is in control. God is calling us to trust him and to release control, to be free in understanding his calling on our lives. Time is a wonderful thing. Allow God to be in control.